Good evening and welcome to the Cycles of Change radio program. I'm your host, David Katzmar, coming to you on this program for February 28, 2013. Neil Killian returns with the debut of his book, The Life Cycles Revolution. Neil worked as a management consultant and psychologist with observations on thousands of clients for 20 years in businesses that turned into a brand new theory known as life cycles. His previous book, titled Life Cycles, has won two finalist awards in the USA Book News contest and has an Amazon rating average of 4.5 stars. The Life Cycles Revolution takes this theory and evidence about a man's 12-year life cycles to a whole new level. An International Book Awards finalist, The Life Cycles Revolution offers comprehensive proof that our lives progress in symbolic 12-year cycles. Readers will learn new terms, research methods, icons, and a whole new form of prediction in this eye-opening book. Some of the diverse lives examined are Napoleon, Albert Einstein, Gandhi, J.K. Rowling, Jerry Seinfeld, and Lady Gaga. Because it is based solely on biographic data, this book lays a bridge between the occult and the science with the newest and perhaps most valid system of self-knowledge ever devised. It's 10 affirming methods will guide you in every facet of your life. The revolution is waiting for you. And waiting for us on the line is author Neil Killian. Neil, are you there?
I am, David. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for coming back. You're here for two reasons. One, of course, is the sequel to your popular book, and also because of popular demand. Had a lot of positive feedback when you were on the show before. So, Neil, tell us a little bit about your taking us a bit deeper in understanding the 12-year cycles that are part of everyone's life. What prompted you to do the sequel?
Yes, what I say in the beginning of the book is that I aim to take people from a black and white understanding, because literally the first book I had a black and white cover, to a much fuller understanding of the nature of the theory. And it would be like moving from a black and white scenario to a technicolor one, because the color of this book is in fact a technicolor one. And I use the logo of life cycles with the two what I call significant years that are in the 12-year cycle, namely the first year of the cycle. So for listeners, that would be every 12th year in your life, that is from birth, the age of 12 and 24, 36, 48, 60 and 72. And then 7 years after that, you'll see on the cover of the book, I have the, as part of the logo, the icon for what I call the Year of Broken Pathways, which happens at ages of 7 and 19 and 31 and 43, 55 and 67. And here again is where my evidence looks at direction change and challenge in people's lives. So part of opening out the theory is really to get a whole lot more detail on the nature of what goes on in those 12-month periods. And to do this, I really drill down into the biographies of people. I'm not just content, as I was in book one, to do a broad brush summary and say, look, this event happened at a certain age, and really just leave it at that. I'm going to look in depth at what happened during the year in that person's life. And in doing so, I've come across a couple of interesting findings that are to do with that year of revolution and what I say is literally like a new age. It's almost you're reborn, as I would say, into a new age, but you are at the same time keeping the same broad brush psychological theme as you do so. But this event in the 12-month period seems to me to have two components to it, which the first one is almost like the death of the old cycle, where people experience perhaps temporary frustrations, roadblocks, a sense that things are happening, change is starting to occur, but the way forward isn't clear. And then a second moment in time when the New Age suddenly becomes clear to people. Now, in this book, I use a number of well-known teaching examples, and I believe in the first show with you, I went into the life of Napoleon in detail, so I'm not going to double that one up for listeners. I would look at the well-known author J.K. Rowling as really somebody who embodies exactly what I'm talking about in the theory. Because when I was doing my research on her, and she's known obviously for Harry Potter, that is the thing that stands mm-hmm. out in yes. her life, on her own website, her own biography, she describes a moment in her age 24 year of revolution where she was on a famous delayed train journey from Manchester to London. I mean, there was some problem on the track and it took 4 hours literally to get from A to B. And in that period of time, the whole notion of Harry Potter literally fell into her head. She said that, being rather British about it, she didn't have a biro on her and she didn't feel inclined to ask any of the other passengers out a biro, so she had to wait till she got home that night, and she started to write from that very moment on. I mean, the birth of Philosopher's Stone happened at that very point.
Hmm.
And she described that feeling as like one of overwhelming elation. She almost gave it the analogy of like falling in love, you know, the feeling of euphoria you get sometimes when you can see some major breakthrough happening in your life. And then the seven-year journey to the Year of Broken Pathways, because it took her that long in order to get her first book published. You know, things are often 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration in the yeah. creative field, as we know. And it really wasn't till her agent, who had been getting a lot of knockbacks, finally got an acceptance from Bloomsbury. And again, that was an unexpected change, because had you asked Rowling at that stage, you know, did she believe that she'd ever get published, you would have said no. She believed in the book so mm-hmm. much so that she was writing a follow-up book, but she didn't believe that new development would happen. And, of course, that forever changed her direction, because after that, it was then a question of could you build an audience and could you write subsequent books in order to keep them every bit as enthralled on those books as she did on the first. So that's just a small example of the way in which I go in detail into people's profiles. And I provide the sort of support evidence that is very difficult to refute. If you take one of the three famous people who I outline in a lot of detail in one of the chapters, that is on Albert Einstein and Gandhi and Charles Darwin, I take those three people where there's a lot of information on the public record. So, I mean, I'm combing through. This book took me way longer to research and put together. And I'm combing through, you know, dozens and dozens of background articles to find enough information. And when I went through the profile of, say, Gandhi, mm-hmm. I'm able to find effective turning points at every one of my significant years. Now, he had a long life. He lived to around 80. So I'm talking about biographic evidence to show the turning points in Gandhi's life at 7, 12, 19, 24, 31, 36, 43, 48, you know, 55, etc. Every single one. And not only that, but I'm then able to link a theme that is to do with all his combined years of revolution and all his combined years of broken pathway. You look at the major landmarks in his life, and each one, in a sense, was building up this sense of responsibility and taking the almost the burdens of society upon his shoulders. And it started in a funny way with his arranged marriage at 12. He began his political career at 24, again by accident, when he was asked to support the local Indian population in South Africa, who were having a lot of political issues at that stage. Then at 36, that central age of 36, is when the whole birth of the Satyagraha, the non-violent protest movement that Gandhi is famous for, that happened at age 36. It's enshrined as the birth of the civil rights movement in history, and caused Gandhi to be called the man of the millennium. It had its 100th year celebration recently in 2005. The first use of large-scale Satyagraha in India at 48, etc. So I'm able to give the sort of evidence that if people were to start to do even the most basic statistical analysis of, you would end up with a huge figure. Whichever way you cut the numbers, you would end up with a huge figure to say this is the prospect of that sort of evidence turning up randomly.
Quite so.
You know, and I'm not just force-feeding this evidence. In other words, if I was to have a discussion with somebody, I perhaps could be criticized for leading them in certain directions and trying to, you know, shoehorn things according to the theory. I've had no access to all of the people's records that I mention in the public arena, and I've only to rely on well-established facts and actual quotes by them, you know, to say subjectively what it meant to their lives.
Yes.
So I'm really excited by the fact that this book, even in its early stages, is getting picked up in a different way to the first book. It's being looked at in terms of its in-depth analysis of many biographies, so it's getting listed as biographies, royal biographies, because I deal with a number of people from royalty in it. It's getting picked up as autobiography because I have in the book a really in-depth examination of my own life. Again, this is a first because I take myself completely through a year of revolution. As I wrote the book, I actually lived through it. Now, this is my age of 60, and people who read it will be able to see that as a participant observer from my side, I'm looking at the same time for certain events to maybe happen at a certain point, namely, you know, that moment of frustration in my own life, and then the breakthrough moment when I could start to see more clearly about the future direction and where I was going. And I do what even now amazes me, when I stand back, because I analyse all my former years of revolution and I take readers right back to my age of 12, 24, 36, 48. I show them the symbolic similarities between what was taking place in my own life at those certain points and the fact that the dates when these moments of frustration that I'm able to put my finger on fairly accurately, and the moment of breakthrough, were at almost the same time. And I'm sure readers will be stunned to see that I'm able to take them through my last 3 years of revolution at 36, 48, and 60, and show them that the moment of frustration happened on the same day, David, the same exact day in each of those years.
That's phenomenal, you know, and there's we must understand that a transitional crisis is both danger and opportunity. In fact, in Chinese, the symbol that they use for crisis is a combination of two symbols. One is the symbol of danger, and the other one is the symbol for opportunity. They put those two together, and that is their word for crisis. I'm also glad that this is being listed as biography and autobiography, because you so wisely chose to illustrate the life of people that we are familiar with, people that we can read about and research to understand how things going on in certain stages of their lives are something that we can follow because they're so well chronicled by virtue of their popularity and their fame. And then you bolstered us even more with opening your own soul to us, and which is a gift to us as a reader, that you say, this is how it applies to me and my own life. And it's a great example for us to understand our own biographies. Because by then, after we read these stories, then we begin to get it. We can look back in our own lives and understand, well, I was going through this there and then, but it isn't an all action, reaction, response in the world of physical causality. There are things that are internally born in us. And one of those things, quite evident now, is the 12-year cycle. Using this as to understand one's own life, to exemplify it, I told our listeners last time about our wonderful meeting when we got together in New York City. And I told you a few things about my life, and I said, okay, Neil, when was I born? And you said, well, you must have been born in 1954 or 1955. And that's absolutely correct. I was born in 1954. And one more note, this radio program, The Cycles of Change, is something I was inspired to do because of my life's work, which is Kala Rhythms, K-A-L-A, Rhythms, the Internal Cycles of a Person, a Nation, or World Society. And I discovered that theory at age 24. So, Neil, I think what you have here is something that relates to everybody, and they can really get something out of that. Wouldn't you say, Neil? This is for us all.
Yes, exactly. That's why I called it the Life Cycles Revolution, because this isn't a revolution where I want people shouting, jumping up and down out in the streets and wanting to overthrow corrupt governments. But it's a quiet revolution that I want to enact one person at a time when they take the bare bones of the theory and start to apply it to their own lives and see the evidence begin to emerge. Because there's no way I can hope to analyze everyone's life. And I do address in the book the issue of sample size and the difficulty in getting enough information of a broad base. But it is something that I can do and show people how it applies to their own lives. Now, I, as well as taking myself as an example, I've taken, with their permission, two close friends of mine. And this is done on an anonymous basis, so people aren't aware of exactly who it is, but I'm able to show them exactly how this applies in, you might say, almost lives more ordinary. But I think all lives are exceptional in their own way, and every revolution and broken pathway moment is special and has significance for the person. So I'm able to take events that happened in terms of career and relationships and anything else that might be of significance. So I don't want any listeners to think that this is in any way elitist or that it doesn't apply to them simply because I'm choosing the objective evidence of people with a high profile. I mean, you could say, well, that's all well and good for J.K. Rowling, but and half a luck. I mean, she's a billionaire author, and my own profile wouldn't be nearly as flattering. But really, you know, everyone's got the operation of life cycles in their life. And there is a wonder in this because it opens up a new level of analysis. You can see your life not just as the unfolding of a series of events that appear really rather random if you take it over a period of time, but you can start to see a pattern, and you can start to focus in upon this pattern. And I use the analogy from my own life that the way I live, and I call this living in superconsciousness. Now, this isn't the superconsciousness where people are necessarily trying to get in contact with the divine and like the yogis practice. This is a much more simple version of superconsciousness where you are trying to integrate your knowledge of the various changes and the themes involved in those changes in your own life, and combine all the past information with where you are at present. So what I say to people is like getting a series of stopwatches. Mm-hmm. And those stopwatches are all tied loosely together with string. So you take my own case. I'm currently 62 years of age. So I've had years of revolution, which I plainly show, and a lot of the material I use is very ordinary. I'm sure it's happened to everyone. For the information at 12, 24, 36, and 48. They're all part of the stopwatches which are ticking away 12 years, you know, not 60 seconds, but each five-second box a year. Mm-hmm. And they're all ticking away together because I'm aware of the impact that all the past cycles have had on my life. I'm also aware where I am right now, because with the full theory, I give people an understanding of a broad theme. Okay, I don't predict events. I'm not a fortune teller, and I must say this, but there is a broad theme of taking the initial breakthrough that happened in the 12 years and gradually progressing with it. I use the phrase, you almost pick up speed as you go, as you begin to develop that theme. And that gives you a different perspective on every year. And I do this by using the analogy of a train. Think of your life as if you were a passenger on a very special train. You're the only passenger on that train. Mm-hmm. It goes around a track for 12 years, just like those stopwatches tied together. You only stop at a station twice, at the beginning, at Revolution Place, and I take readers there. I give them a precise mental image of how it works. And then again, 7 years later, at the Broken Pathways station. You get out, you explore that station, and you are literally more vulnerable in those years to the forces of fate. I'm not saying that fateful events can't happen in other years. They certainly do. But if you look over the course of your life at important events, you can see a much stronger operation of fate or destiny. Or if you don't like those concepts, if you're a hard-headed realist, you can simply say statistically improbable events that took place. And then the rest of the intervening years of the cycle, you are dealing with the consequences of what happens in those two change years.
Yeah.
I also do, again, for the first time, I take four of my famous cases, and they're fairly disparate. Yes, I do use J.K. Rowling. I also use Beatle John Lennon. I use politician Gordon Brown, and I use the Renaissance genius Michelangelo. And I take them through the entire back half of the 12-year cycle, year by year. I take the theme that I talk about for that year, and then I show exactly how it would have applied in each of those disparate lives in obviously quite radically different ways, but it is the same thing. that's applying each time. So again, in book one, all I did was touch lightly on the concept and introduce the icons and say in broad terms that this is what I saw as how the entire 12-year period works. This time, I get into in-depth supporting evidence for it.
Marvelous. And so are there two points of critical transitional crisis? It's beginning of year seven and the beginning of the next 12-year cycle after one 12-year cycle completes? Is that how it works?
That's it. That's it exactly.
Well, I can think back on some times in my life, Neil, where I would have really helped me to understand that when I was feeling, well, kind of mixed up, indecisive, upset about something, that it wasn't just because there's something wrong with me. I'm thinking, well, what's wrong with me? I got a decent job. My health is good. And why am I feeling kind of confused? I got things going okay. My ducks are in a row, but I sure don't feel like it. So there must be something wrong with me. Well, there wasn't something wrong with me. It was just time for a crisis. And sometimes we have to make some very important decisions at these transitional points. These are turning points in our lives. And if we understand that they're born in us to come up at certain points, then it may help us to feel a lot better about what we're going through and maybe decide more clearly how we're going to choose the course of our lives.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And once you've seen the breadth of my evidence, I'm sure that most people, when they finish reading the book, will be in absolutely no doubt about its operation. And in one, you know, relatively small part of the book, I take the biographies of a fellow who was called the Wolf of Wall Street, Jordan Belfort, you know, the former white-collar criminal about whom Leonardo DiCaprio is going to be starring in a movie.
Yes.
Depicting him at the coming out at the end of the year. And would you believe that the entire two books precisely describe the theory? They describe exactly what happens to him at those critical ages of 24 and 31, 36 in the early stages. In fact, 60% of his first book describes just that 1 year at age 31, and precisely describes the sense of growing unease that you sometimes get when a change overtakes you, even though you perhaps don't want it to be that way, even though you would rather keep on with what your comfortable existence has been, it becomes obvious over a period of time that that's not going to happen. And that's where he got into a whole sequence of trouble when he tried to hide money in a Swiss account and then cover his tracks. And then he was told of another investigation into his illegal operations that he'd have to leave the industry. He'd have to use the words, walk off into the sunset. And that forever changed his life. And, of course, he hated that. You know, we can't avoid these things that happen. And in the last chapter, I go through 10 different methods that people can use to take some of this material and apply it to their own lives literally every day. Life cycles, people may think, is a rather large-scale theory to apply to your life. I mean, a whole year or two taken over a 12-year point, how could that have implications for your day-to-day existence? Well, it can. It can affect the way in which you approach career change, in which you imagine your 35, you know, you're 1 year short of what I often call the bursting on the scene moment at 36. This is about to happen.
Yes.
This knowledge would most certainly assist you in dealing with a somewhat bumpy road, because this change is not always one of comfort. I mean, we mostly like things to be smooth and the good bits to be even better, but sometimes the bad bits and the negativity can upset us. Now, at my book launch, which I've got scheduled for the end of this month, in fact, I'm going to do again a fairly unique test. I'm going to take a guy who's been a friend of mine. He actually went to school with my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask him to take over at the end of my introduction as almost like a testimonial, because he's 36 right now, and to talk about the amazing changes that have been going on in his life, where he, a year before that, was working for a market research firm and didn't enjoy it, didn't really enjoy the politics. He wasn't a corporate sort of guy.
Mm-hmm.
But he'd always had a yen to be a comedian. He'd done a little bit of work in that area, you know, a little bit of stand-up, but he was talked into going on to a major talent quest. We've got a thing called Australia's Got Talent, and, mm-hmm. you know, it's a sort of, I don't know whether there's a US equivalent, it's sort of like a American Idol, but it is for a broad brush of entertainment, not just singing. Anyway,
yep.
he reached the semi-finals of that. And
oh.
as a result of that, he then got called back for further work, and that was unexpected. And then he ended up doing a one-man show at the Sydney Opera House, which is, of course, the major venue that we
yes.
have. Then other things have been happening in his life. He's been getting offers, unusual offers, to get involved in script writing and get involved in TV work. I mean, and I said to him, we had coffee together the other day, and I said, so Sam, you know, how does all this feel? And he said, oh, you know, it's terrific just now. I mean, he's, if you like, living the life. That sense of euphoria, you could see it on his face. And he's got a couple of months to go. And he said, you mean to say, you know, more stuff could happen as well? I said, well, yes. I mean, you know, that's just the way things sometimes turn out. And this sort of thing can be applied in your life all the time. I take in the book an analysis of a couple of composite cases, because I want to really try and get at people's particular dramas one way and another. And I've noticed, say, around the age of 31, there is often a lot of dramas to do with relationships, breakups, new people on the scene. And I take a case, and it's just a composite case. It doesn't really exist, but I know so many other cases that, of course, to keep people's stories anonymous, I've no desire to start putting names and faces out there. But this girl's in a relationship, and she has gone into business with this chap. They've got perhaps a small business happening together. They're living together. She really wants marriage and kids and a definite future. She wants them to maybe buy a house. She wants the business to grow. What she doesn't see happening around the side of her life is that he's the one who looks after the marketing side of the business. She looks after production. Now, he's spending more and more time on his client visits. And then a friend of hers phones her and said, look, I've seen your boyfriend in a bar on Friday night, you know, with this other woman, a woman we both know.
Mm.
And so she confronts him about it, and And he tries to deny it, as often happens in these cases. And one thing leads to another, and what we have here is an affair going on behind her back with a woman who turns out to be the major client. Now, again, mm-hmm. I've really created this scenario, but I've seen versions of it so often. Now, you can, if you've got the life cycles knowledge, understand exactly at 31 these sort of changes are happening. And I get this sort of thing confirmed to me in a lot of different ways when people are talking to me about their own lives, because every time I have a conversation, everyone's interested, of course. And then they start to talk about what's going on and difficulties, and I say, well, I'm actually not surprised to hear about that.
Absolutely. So, well, you know, you give three great examples of the Wall Street villain and your friend Sam, who conversely made a decision for the good and went on to be successful in a career that was more meant for him. And you've also exemplified how these can be people going off in different directions and having affairs. So, you know, we reach turning points in our lives, and we can either kind of understand ourselves internally, assess our situation objectively, and make decisions for the better or for the worse. That's really the important thing of coming to the junction of a transitional crisis. Folks, you're listening to the Cycles of Change radio program. We're talking with Neil Killian about his latest book that's going to be released end of March 2013, The Life Cycles Revolution. Look for it on Amazon, and you can Google Neil's name. Neil and Killian is K-I-L-L-I-O-N. So it's important for us to understand the stages of life themselves, just as it's important for a farmer to know what season it is, whether to plant, whether to harvest, and what to expect. We can understand that perhaps there's seasons in our lives, if I may take the liberty to use that terminology, and to understand how when we come to certain points in our lives, when they are due, that we're not only going to reach a turning point of emotion, but we can also reach a crisis of decision, because this is when our equilibriums are not necessarily in one direction or another. It is like switching gears in the middle of an intersection. And if we understand that and we realize that this is a temporary transition, then perhaps we can decide for the better. And I think that when you see the modalities that are explained here and the methods that are put forth for us to understand our lives in Neil's new book, then it can really put things in perspective. Frankly, Neil, I think if people understood the internal rhythms that we all have, there would be a lot less neurosis in life, a lot less, regardless of the impact of daily experience, a deeply ingrained feeling that something is wrong with somebody because they don't believe that they're feeling the way they should be feeling with the situation as it is. Well, there's internal things too. So look at the world around you and understand the rhythms within. So Neil, you're now 62, and so you're in basically the third year of a new 12-year cycle. Is that true, Neil?
That's correct. That's correct. It was ushered in with some revolutionary change in my own life, which I detail for people in Chapter 9 of the book. That is followed because I see in my analysis that each of a block of 2 years within the 12-year cycle has an overriding theme. So let me explain that a little bit to viewers. You are going to be, viewers, listeners, you are going to be introduced to 44 new terms when you read the book. Terms never used before, a theory never put forward before. Nobody has ever said anything even remotely like my theory. So I can't stress enough that it is quite unique. Of the many people who have listed the book online, people don't know exactly how to categorize it. Perhaps New Thought might come closest to it. Each block of 2 years, I call a dyad. A dyad is simply a linked group of two, which is used in subjects as wide as chemistry and even sociology, with a small social group being two people. Now, this dyad has an overriding theme. Now, the first year, your year of revolution, which commences the cycle, is what I call the events that take place in, because I see this dyad as having its basic corollary in the cycle of day and night. That's our most fundamental circadian rhythms-based cycle. So the year of evolution is alike events in the daytime hours of that dyad, and that's followed by the nighttime component, which is like almost the consequences that follow on from the actions taken in the daytime hours. So that first dyad, consisting of the year of revolution and what I call its complement, the year of peace. So I'm introducing a bit more of the theory to listeners here. That overriding theme of the dyad is initiation. It's all to do with getting started. There are different aspects of that. The first, obviously, is seeing the breakthroughs. And the second is almost like putting things in order. You know, once they stormed the Bastille, there was a lot of tidying up to be done afterwards. You know, there was order to be restored. Now, that for me was in terms of completion of the project that was commenced and the undertaking of steps that would get those elements in my life arranged together. Now, this is exactly also described in some other cases where I show that sometimes the major change will carry on for the next 12-month block as well. In my own case, there was a lot of revolutionary change in my life at age 36, but I only started my outplacement business formally at age 37. So perhaps if somebody was wanting to be a nitpicker in terms of statistics, they might pick up the 37, you know, rather than the 36. But I see this initial block of 2 years representing a period of initiation in your life.
Yes.
Big change at 36 or 48 or 60, and more change to do with the tidying up and preparation of whichever direction you're headed in. And now I'm 62 again. I'm in the first part of the next dyad, which is the taking of the theme that I have and progressing it in a forward moving sense. And the name of that year is the year of energy. The energy that you have with the journey that you're undertaking. And, of course, I can show people, again, if I was to use my own life, all the ways in which there are things happening in terms of events, promotional work, even doing this show, right down to my blogs and my work on relationships. I do touch in the book on relationships, and I've been blogging for the last 12 months, if people would care to follow either of my two blogs on very famous couples. So there's a lot of things happening in my own life. And
that, all of our lives, that, if we but understand.
In all of our lives. And that, in that dyad, is to do with development. Okay, so the first year, the daytime hours, are the year of energy, and the complement of that is the year of rest. Okay, now that doesn't mean you're resting, anything but. Peace doesn't mean peaceful either. Peace often means, you know, a lot of activity going on in order to ensure that you've got yourself, your plans together, and rest sometimes implies more a reflective look at what you're doing to make sure that you don't suffer from burnout, or you don't fully understand the implications of all the energy that you're putting into the system.
Maybe you're more creative when you're one, and then you preserve that energy.
Sorry.
Oh, I was saying maybe you're more creative on year one, and then you preserve that on year two. So it's like a day-night cycle, so you just maintain certain levels and keep it status quo and keep the system running that you develop in 1 year. You do that in the 2 years, you just preserve that, and then you have another 1 year of creativity after that. Would it be something like that?
Yes, it can well be, because I see two models for this brand new theory of life, and the first one is simple. I have the word upheaval, and it's joined by an arrow that links across in a circular fashion to the word challenge. So it runs for 6 years, so it's a slightly longer arrow in one sense, and 4 years in the reverse thing to complete the circle, because there's 4 years between the challenge year for broken pathways and the end of the cycle. So that's the first model.
Yes.
For this brand new theory of life. And the second model, almost the model behind the model, is the names of the six diets. And I will tell readers exactly how I came to derive all this. Once again, there is no use of metaphysics in my theory or occult. It was all derived from studying biographies and studying and reflecting on my own lives and the lives of people I know well.
Yes.
So the six dyads are initiation, which links to development, which links to the dyad of diversity, which is where we proliferate almost with the theme to its fullest extent. Then to the dyad of anticlimax, which is where we believe we can't be any more effectively going in the direction we are, like J.K. Rowling was at that time, and as I go on to show, so was Michelangelo, as was John Lennon, etc., etc. That's then followed by that challenge moment, that year of broken pathways, and that then in turn joins on to the dyad of ascent, because literally we have a metaphorical mountain to climb in our lives. This is the best analogy I can put it. It's like you've stopped at the station, the train, which you need to rejoin at the end of your broken pathways year, has a second engine attached, and you think to yourself idly, why would that happen? And you look in the distance and you see foothills, and behind foothills there are large mountains, and you're going to be going up them.
Yeah.
And the last dyad of the 12-year cycle I call realization, because at that stage you're at the top of your particular mountain. You're reaching the highest point you will in that cycle. If I take President Barack Obama as a good example of that, he was 43 when he made it to the Senate from the state legislature to the national, and the game had changed. It was forever different. He'd never return again to the state level politics.
Yes.
He had a mountain to climb, because he had a major opponent in order to secure the Democratic nomination. I mean, Hillary Clinton wasn't going to go away in a hurry, and those two fought, you could say, somewhat friendly, but in other regards, a pitched battle to see who would win the nomination. And then, and that wasn't resolved in a hurry. It was only when he was in that diet of realization that he secured the nomination and then went on to the presidency. And his years of revolution are not about formal office. They're about the introduction of large-scale community-based initiatives, and particularly in the healthcare area, because that's a standout. This happens at, for him at 48 and at 36 and at 24. And if you look at one of his biographies, a disproportionate amount of the biography dwells on just that year of 24 when he was working in the projects area in Chicago and
yes.
introduced to the difficulties in the community and undertaking initiatives. So there's two models that I want people to think about in their own lives, so they can think about the important years of change, which basically amount to upheaval and challenge, and then think about the model that lies behind that model. And that model is to do with 6 years of 2 years each, as block of 2 years, and that is to do with initiation, development, diversity, anticlimax, ascent, and realization. And those things can then be combined as if it was one large model of 12 years that represented one large slice of daytime hours.
Yeah.
That is years one through to six. And the second group of 6 years represents a nighttime component of that. And this, I use the phrase super diet because it sits above that. And you can see that the first 6 years are all to do with unbroken forward momentum of your theme. You're taking that theme
mm-hmm.
and you're working with it. And that's what you're doing in your own life in so many different ways. Okay, it contains those sub-elements, if you will, but the overriding part of that theme is the unbroken forward momentum, and the last part, the consequences part, if you will, the remaining 6 hours, 6 years, are to do with ascent to realization, which is a combination of some of the words from those other diets. So what you're doing is then ascending with your challenge to the point of realization.
Well, this all makes perfect sense because although the actual events of our lives are not predetermined, it's interesting to know that we're born with a roadmap of development. And this roadmap of development is going to be in whatever stage, depending on what time it is. And what time it is merely how long you've been alive. And there are basic, simple elements replete throughout the universes. And all the stages of development, we can find a fractal relationship. If you understand anything about cycles anywhere, you understand something about cycles everywhere. Case in point, it's a fractal relationship in the model that you give us, the 12-year cycles in a person's life. Because every 2 years functions as a dyad of night and day. And yet the cycle itself functions as a dyad, with the first 6 years being like a day and the second 6 years being like a night. And this probably goes out into larger patterns too. For instance, I've often said in my theory of megarhythms of world change that the cycles, they last so many hundreds of years and so forth. But if it calls for a time for a crisis to be in the world, people ask me, well, how long does that crisis last? And I tell them quite plainly, it lasts for 12 years, because a day in the world lasts 12 years. And if you come down to the national level, a day in a nation lasts 1 year. And a day for you and I lasts 24 hours. And the same cycles that you find in a person, you can find in a nation going through its trends, its ups and downs. And then even larger still, in greater periods of time, and you look at the changes of civilizations from the rise and fall of Rome to the rise of the machine age, the Renaissance to the Baroque, and now are going into the information age. It's the same cycles over and over again. So if you understand this, what you have as a roadmap for the development of yourself, so much easier will it be to understand all of the things that are moving around us. Because there's a fractal relationship, cycles within cycles within cycles. And it's from simplicity that complexity develops. And it might seem like it's all too much. But because of work like you've done here, Neil, is you break it down into its simple elements that are replete throughout all of complexity. And so we really can understand the atoms, the molecular development of really what makes us tick. And that's what I love about your work, Neil.
Look, David, it's incredible that I'm drawn full circle to, I suppose, at the end of our first interview, I mentioned it briefly, but it is still, for me, just a gobsmacking moment, which I wrote up in an article about. We'd had lunch, we talked on, the restaurant had emptied, I'm sure the waiters were expecting us to leave. I think there was a Greek waiter there who even wanted to join in on our conversation.
Yes.
And then we got down to discussing this model that I had with the like a day night component. That's the clearest analogy that I could draw for the changes that I could see happening within people's lives. And I said, if you take those couple of super dyads, the daytime hours in the first 6 years and the nighttime for the last, you're starting to talk about one symbolic day. 12 years in a person's life is one symbolic day. And then you said, yes, that's where my theory is too, you know, in terms of world history, you know, 12 years is a day.
Yes.
And I thought, you know, in the Hermetic tradition, as above, so below, which I guess is a precursor of thinking about fractal relationships and, you know, those ever intertwining patterns that you can get.
Yes.
And, you know, you couldn't get two more disparate ways of coming at the notion of cycles than you and I, you know, and I always steer clear except in the small scale looking at personal relationships rather than ever looking at, you know, because mathematically it would be almost impossible for me to look at whole combinations of people to make up a society. But you take your theory from the global perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking at precise information, and the more precise the better, because I hope to be the first person to ever demonstrate this in terms of an academic respectability. You know, people are already listing this book as a textbook, and so, you know, I aim to turn that into reality, and I've got some early feelers out to my old university to see whether we can do a joint project on my data. But I'm taking all that in the micro sense. You've already got the macro developed, and here we are sitting facing one another saying, yes, 12 years is a day. Precisely. That's right.
Well, it's amazing that we met at the equator of these theories, and we came up from two different points because I come from the West and the Northern Hemisphere, and you come from the opposite side of two different hemispheres. Maybe that's why we started our research at two different points.
Little
joke. But in any case, you're absolutely right. Here we were looking at cycles from two entirely different points of view, and there we are arriving at the same theory. Wherever I find that the work I've been doing dovetails with yours, I find that there is a congruency to the point that the premises that I've used to support the theories that I have serve to corroborate the facts you state. And that's really an exciting thing here. Folks, again, I want to remind you that this is Neil Killian of The Life Cycles Revolution, his new book, a sequel to his very successful award-winning book titled Life Cycles. Find him on Amazon.com and Google Neil Killian. His last name is K-I-L-L-I-O-N. You're going to find his blog and you're going to find his website. And references to his work and lots of good reviews and so forth. So we're just wrapping up here on the Cycles of Change radio program on this show for February 28, 2013. And Neil, I want to thank you so much for coming back and telling us about this follow-up work. It's taking it to an even greater level and reaching greater depths. I really appreciate you sharing this with us tonight, Neil.
David, it was an absolute pleasure.
Folks, do what I do, read his works, and understand life a little bit more. Even if I weren't an enthusiast, I would take great comfort in reading the works of Neil Killian and Life Cycles. David Katzmeyer here, signing out. Thank you for listening to the Cycles of Change.